A Tempo is a production of the Classical Network and is made possible by the support of listeners like you. Thank you for your support. Welcome to A Tempo, the Classical Network spotlight on the arts and culture. I'm Rachel Katz, and I'm your host as we explore the changes at work in the performing arts. Each week, I'll bring you some of the latest news and also take time to examine many of the issues that are challenging these arts organizations. We'll look at the impact of the economy, technology, and society on the arts, the importance of arts education, and how these organizations and ensembles are adjusting and innovating as they face the future. Today, we'll check in with two of the Houston Performing Arts institutions whose seasons were put in jeopardy when Hurricane Harvey slammed into Texas last August, the Houston Symphony Orchestra and Houston Grand Opera. My guests will be Perrin Leach, Managing Director of Houston Grand Opera, and John Mangum, who became CEO and Executive Director of the Houston Symphony earlier this year. As part of A Tempo, we're pleased to bring you some of the news from around the world of the performing arts. The Boston Symphony Orchestra's principal flutist is suing the orchestra, charging that she has been paid less than her male colleagues. The Boston Herald reported that Elizabeth Rowe filed a complaint after a new state law on pay equality went into effect July 1st, claiming she's paid $70,000 less than the principal oboist, who is a man. Citing a statement from Rowe's attorney, the paper said Rowe attempted to address the situation internally before filing suit. According to the paper, the orchestra declined to comment at this time. The American Ballet Theatre has named Sasha Radetzky as artistic director of the ABT Studio Company. Radetzky had retired from ABT in 2014, serving as a member of the Corps de Ballet since 1996 and then as soloist beginning in 2003. He has served as ballet master of the ABT Studio Company since 2016 and has been a company teacher with ABT and director of the ABT NYU Master's Ballet Pedagogy Program, among other teaching positions. The studio company is the highest level in the ABT's training program and is comprised of 12 dancers ages 16 to 20 who show outstanding potential and perform works from the traditional ballet canon as well as new commissions. Jean-Andrea Noseda, who leads the National Symphony Orchestra, has been named as the next general music director of the Zurich Opera, beginning in the 2021-2022 season. According to the Washington Post, Noseda will replace Fabio Luisi, who is moving on to take on the position of music director of the Dallas Symphony Orchestra. Those are just some of the headlines this week from around the arts world. It's been nearly a year since Hurricane Harvey pounded the metropolitan Houston area during its devastating run that also tore through parts of the Caribbean and Yucatan Peninsula. The Category 4 storm hit the region Saturday, August 26, and stalled, dumping between 30 and 60 inches of rain throughout Houston. By Monday, as the storm began to move out, the assessments began. Among the casualties was the thriving downtown arts district, home to the Houston Ballet, Houston Symphony Orchestra, Houston Grand Opera, Alley Theater, and a number of other performing arts organizations. Jones Hall, home of the symphony, faced some flooding, but the Wortham Theater Center, which has the ballet company and opera, was deluged. With opening nights and galas just weeks away, the organizations scrambled to assess the damage and begin adjusting their performance plans to make sure that, indeed, the shows would go on. For the opera, that meant finding new venues for its entire season, which included the launch of its Seeking the Human Spirit series, a program designed to explore universal themes and nurture new partnerships within the community. The solution was to create a home away from home at the George R. Brown Convention Center. Dubbed the Resilience Theater, the temporary performance space became a symbol for the arts community's determination to keep bringing their art to the community in spite of what they had been through. In a recent release, the opera said that it sustained nearly $15 million in losses because of storm damage and reduced sales. But special fundraising efforts had secured more than $9 million, and the company looked forward to celebrating its return to Wortham in September. Perrin Leach, managing director of the opera company, was returning to Houston from a leadership training session in Europe the night the rain began. He said it was clear from the start that it was going to be a rough storm, but the extent of the damage was overwhelming when staff began arriving that Monday.
We headed downtown on that Monday morning, and it was immediately obvious how bad it was, in that we got to the Alley Theatre first, then to the Wortham, and the set of stairs that goes down to our costume shop in the basement was full of water, and the costume shop is 15 feet below that. So I knew it was really bad. The water was, to say, was the height of at the top of the stairs. So immediately we sort of went into option modes of, well, we know that downstairs is going to be very, very bad. The stage doesn't look to be too badly affected, et cetera, et cetera. But, we started knowing immediately that we were out of, at that point, we thought we were probably out of the office for 2 to 3 weeks. And that the building would get drained and then start some work in the basement. But over the next week, probably, it became clear that was going to be much, much worse than that in terms of the amount of water that was in the building that needed to be pumped out. Was going to take at least 2 weeks to do that anyway. But also, the general infrastructure of what had been damaged underneath as you started to pump water out, you realized how much damage had been done, not only by the force of the water, but also the toxicity of the water. So they call it Category 1 water. And Category 1 water looks and smells like human excrement, because it is human excrement. So as the water got pumped out and we actually got access to the basement, it became very clear that this is a much longer problem. And we started looking for where we would perform our full rep at that point.
Well, you not only then relocated and found another option, but you also renamed it. You sort of cleaned it, and you renamed it the Resilience Theater. How did that whole concept emerge of not just making it a substitute place, but this is our home for this year?
Ultimately, performers need performance spaces, and you build opera houses because they are very, very specific buildings that have great acoustics, they have room for a large orchestra, et cetera, et cetera. So we did a pretty quick look around the other venues in town. We also require a great deal more time than most organizations because, we have rehearsals that can only happen, one or two a day because of the nature of the work that we're doing, et cetera, et cetera. So it became pretty clear pretty quickly that none of the normal options of just going to a different theater were going to work for us. They had neither availability, time, et cetera, et cetera. And my previous life as a technical and production director, I have built temporary venues. Mainly at the Edinburgh Festival, in which you find a venue and then you bring everything into it. But then we started looking at very large spaces with large power that we would be able to adapt to be a venue. So we worked with Houston first, who are our landlords down at the Wortham. They're also the landlords of the conference center in Houston. And we came up with this plan. At this point in time, the George R. Brown Hall A3 that we were using was being used for refugee support for people who've been displaced by the hurricane. But we knew that that was already starting to come to an end. So we found Hall A3, which is just one of their large facilities, and then walked out, paced out what the theater would look like within that space. The other space we were looking at that point in time was a very large tent that would be pitched probably on a large area of green space in Houston. So we kind of had two options running at the same time, but it was clear that the George R. Brown was our option, better option. And we committed to not losing a single performance and having all the performances on the same date, certainly through the end of the calendar year, was what we originally said, because that's what we thought we'd be out of the Wortham for. So, sure enough, we mapped all that out, started that load in 5 days before we started rehearsals and 2 weeks before we started our first opening night of our season. And, in discussion with that, we had, again, two options. We were trying to get someone to name it to help us with the financial cost of building a brand new venue. When that became clear that that was all having to move way too fast, we talked to the staff and said, what should we call this? Because it's not the Wortham, it's not the Brown Theatre, so what should we call it? And somebody brilliant in our marketing and communications team came up with the word resilience, which at that point hadn't really been used in Houston. It's now become a real sort of badge of honor for Houston as a city, the word resilience. We bounced hard. But at that point in time, it was just another word. And we all felt it just encapsulated perfectly who we were as an organization and how we were not going to let a little bit of local weather take away our season. So when someone said it, it was like, oh, that's good. That's really good. And I think, again, it really struck a chord with our audience and our supporters.
You did take a financial hit for the season, but it also seems to have created new opportunities to reach new types of supporters, new donors. How do you look at the balance of the year from a financial position, particularly with an eye towards the long term?
One of the things that crisis does, it's a very different financial ask to your supporters and donors than, you know, our eyes are bigger than our stomach and we would like to continue gorging on this, that or the other. Could you help pay for it? Is a financial ask that we're very used to on a day-to-day, year-by-year basis. This was something that was not of our making. This is something that happened to us by Mother Nature. So the financial ask we were able to make to our supporters was very significant. You know, we are in trouble. This is not our fault. This is how we have responded. We've been very clear in our communication. We've told you what's going on. We've been clear about what our expectations are, is to carry on serving and being part of the healing for Houston as a city, but we are going to need some financial help. And actually, our, you know, our supporters have been absolutely amazing. And you're right, there have been people who come forward and said, we are not going to allow HGO to you know, really suffer during this period of time. It's important for us to have great art, great opera in our city. One of the things that I said to the Houston Chronicle editorial board was, you know, let's not be the city that says, do you remember before Harvey we had great arts organizations? Because that has been true in other areas in which cities have had a huge crisis of some description that has involved the arts, and that opportunity is gone forever. Because once you start to take that, those backward steps, it's pretty uncommon for you to be able to take big forward steps again 5 years later. So that was the message, which was, trust us, you know us as a management, and our relationship is significant and deep enough. You know you've had the whole story from us as we see it, and we do need your help at this point. And again, through good planning and having those really strong relationships, we were able to get out there pretty early, start raising funds to try and take care of the $15 million of losses that we will suffer across this sort of 2-3 year period. With, as you say, a huge impact on our audience numbers for this year. We only had 1,700 seats rather than 2,200 seats. So even if we sold out, we were 500 seats a night down on what we would have projected selling or being able to sell. So yeah, the losses are significant. You know, the $5 million-ish of hard losses of costumes, props, wigs, et cetera. And then the majority of the rest is made up in lost audiences, building the Resilience Theatre, which is a chunk of change, and. So our losses are about $15 million.
This past season had also coincided with the launch of your new series, Seeking the Human Spirit. How did that experience go, and were there ways where you felt it in some ways even highlighted what the series was intended to do?
No question at all. I mean, it absolutely personified people's human spirit and the thing we were talking about, which is common to all. Every person in this world has, you know, the way they respond to crisis, the way they respond to things which are deeply challenging. In this case, it was a physical thing, but, you know, there are emotional, of course, huge emotional impacts as well. You know, we have members of staff who are coming into work having lost their houses, their cars, their livelihoods. Those people responding to things that they never imagined could happen. And again, are things that have happened to them. So in terms of both the staff, but also the projects we're doing, there is a resonance there of the fortitude of man's spirit that really allowed us to dig deep into some of the new relationships we had based around the artistic initiative of Seeking the Human Spirit that really helped in terms of those working relationships. We will go back to the Wortham, a very different company. They say that the hottest fire forges the strongest steel. I think that's very, very true of, you know, all the arts organizations in town, reflected on it for Houston Grand Opera, obviously. But you find out about things that work, don't work, and it's very easy to sometimes think, oh, we're doing these things wrong, we can do these things better. You start to get some clarity on what are the really important things you need to do to create art. And it isn't actually about buildings. It's about human people, spirit, and how they can use that talent that they've been given to really help be part of the healing process. And, you know, it is really incredible to watch how a couple of months, probably, people were very much in practical mode. But by the end of the calendar year last year, people needed to have something feeding their soul as well as trying to get over the physical effects of the hurricane. They needed that extra soul food, for want of a better word, in terms of rebuilding their lives and rebuilding, you know, what's important to them in their lives, other than just practical mundane things. So I think we've been able to use these projects as a way of really identifying a way that we as an organization can help Houston as a city rebuild.
Well, you said you'll be returning as a changed company. What are some other ways that you've now maybe changed the sense of what it means to be a part of both the Houston arts community, but also the broader Houston community?
Houston Grand Opera has always been, you know, the leader of the arts organizations in Houston. We've been lucky enough to be world recognized as a center for new work and a center for training and development of artists and staff. We have a lot of people who have been trained at Houston Grand Opera who are now running organizations all over the world. But I think that, as I say, what happens is when you have 10 things you cannot do opera without, and then you realize you can't provide 6 of those, for instance, it does change the way that we as an organization will be in the future. Because, you know, there are things, it's very easy to get very finicky, if you like, about small things that actually really don't matter. So when you get to a daily schedule that says, you know, these 4 coachings are in people's private houses, none of those private houses, if we had been told a year earlier, oh, we'd like to do some rehearsals here, you go in there and you say, well, this isn't the right place to do rehearsals. It hasn't got this, it hasn't got that, whatever. But what they had was a piano and a coach and someone who wanted to learn from that coach. And actually, that's really important, because you do realize that the fairly luxurious surroundings we have at the Wortham, when it's, you know, not underwater, are actually things that you get to take for granted. So, you know, it's just different. On the practical side, we'll be very different. We've learned how to be very, very adaptable and to not ever question. I mean, I don't think at any point during the year we've said we can't do something. We've always gone, we can't do what we originally were trying to do. What are we trying to achieve? What's the best we can do in order to make the product as good as it can be? But I think, just generally speaking, you know, you feel stronger having been through significant turmoil. And you look to your colleague who was absolutely there with you, either standing in ankle-deep water or carrying servers down staircases with no lights to try and get an IT system up and running. We have that commonality, that bond together now, of everybody had to step up, everybody had to do extra this year, everybody contributed to making sure that Houston Grand Opera not only survived but was able to flourish to a degree. That's just a different feeling. You know you can rely on every single person who stood arm to arm, toe to toe with you through the course of the season. That's a really empowering thing for people to know that everyone's got their back.
That was Perrin Leach, Managing Director of Houston Grand Opera. The opera company will return to Wortham this fall, beginning with a celebratory concert September 26 featuring Placido Domingo. More information about the company and its season can be found at houstongrandopera.org. The Houston Symphony was able to return to its regular performance venue by October, but its members had also felt the impact of the hurricane, both in their personal lives and as members of the broader community. Following the storm, groups of musicians traveled to perform at various shelters, hoping to bring a little comfort to those who lost homes and belongings. At that time, the Symphony was in the middle of a search for a new CEO to replace Mark Hansen, who had left earlier in the summer to take on leadership of the San Francisco Symphony. After its search, the Houston Symphony tapped John Mangum, who had been president and artistic director of the Philharmonic Society of Orange County. And while Mangum didn't start in Houston until this past April, he was able to observe the impact of the storm on the orchestra and its members' responses as the season unfolded.
One of the things that impressed me right away was, you know, watching from afar. At that point, I was in Southern California, but when Harvey struck, watching how the symphony really rose to the occasion. They pivoted right away, found an alternate performance space because, of course, they were flooded out of the theater district in downtown Houston. And they gave a series of free concerts at Studi Hall at Rice University here in Houston. And then also members of the orchestra really sort of on their own initiative, not even sort of, it was their own initiative, banded together in chamber groups to go out into shelters and other locations in the hardest hit areas of the city to bring music to people that were really affected by the storm. So that was incredibly impressive to watch. And, you know, I would say in terms of the longer term effects, you know, the theater district is still not put to rights. It's an ongoing process of getting the parking facilities back up to where they were before the hurricane, and of course getting the home of the opera and the ballet reopened, the Worthen Theater Center. Luckily, Jones was not impacted at all in the way that the Worthen Theater Center was, so we were able to move back in and commence our concert season, you know, this year. We didn't, the opera and the ballet are still out of the Worthen Theater Center at this point. So we were able to get back into our home. But, you know, it did have a pretty profound effect on ticket sales for the year, on fundraising, you know, a lot of challenges lingering when you have this kind of crisis that affects so many people. You know, it's something that diverts attention away from everything else, and I think rightly so. The city was really and continues to be really focused on recovering from that event, and so you know, we're working to fulfill our mission in that landscape.
Well, how has that impacted then the later part of the season that just ended, and perhaps played into a bit how you planned next year's season?
Well, I mean, with the way that we plan the seasons, a lot of the 18-19 season was already baked, even before the hurricane. But I think, you know, part of what's gone into the planning is we wanted to have a tremendously appealing season that would help remind people that music is sort of a critical part of their lives. You know, people who were diverted by the other things going on in Houston at the moment. So we wanted to make sure that there was something there for them. And then, of course, also we wanted to, you know, open our season with a piece that would make a statement about the resilience and strength of the city. And so our music director, Andres Orozco-Estrada, has chosen to open the season with Mahler's Second Symphony. And so that I think is the Resurrection Symphony. I think that's a wonderful sort of statement about how resilient this community is and a way to sort of capture that, the spirit of that in music.
Do you see ways that the arts community at large is collaborating or coming together a little bit more, or, you know, has that fostered a different type of dynamic?
You know, again, having been here for 2 months, I have sort of a newcomer's perspective on this. It feels like the arts community here was already collaborative. You know, before the hurricane, there's good dialogue among the different arts groups. There's good cooperation and planning. One thing that came about in the immediately following the hurricane was a joint benefit concert at the Miller Outdoor Theater here in Houston that was put on by all of the seven major arts organizations in the city. And I think that kind of collaboration, you know, sent a strong message about, like I said, the resilience of the arts community, but also the willingness of the city to turn out and support the arts community. And, you know, that kind of collaboration, it just filters through in, you know, how we talk openly about the effects that Harvey had on each of us as organizations, share the different strategies, the different approaches that we're taking to overcoming those effects. There's a lot of good dialogue and openness there.
Well, what were some of the things that had attracted you to seek out the position in Houston?
For me, what was really attractive about the position here in Houston, and what struck me almost immediately, was the incredible quality of the orchestra. I mean, the orchestra is just playing at the highest artistic level, and their partnership with Andres has really borne some wonderful musical fruit, if you will. The performance that I heard during my initial visit to the city as part of the interview process was really what clinched it for me. I just felt like I wanted to be a part of what was going on stage with the orchestra. And, you know, at every step of the process, there's a wonderful group of supporters around the symphony here in Houston, dynamic, engaged, energetic audiences that feel, you know, diverse and youthful in a way that I don't necessarily feel everywhere that I go to concerts. It's certainly present in some places, but I was happy to find it present here. The community itself is this huge, diverse city. I mean, it's nearly 7 million people in the greater Houston area. And, you know, it's one of the most diverse cities in the country, if not the most diverse. And it teems with the kind of energy that diversity brings. And I feel like the orchestra has done a good job of plugging into that and starting to make some really meaningful connections with the community and with the city here through a variety of different programs. But, you know, all of that really spoke to me and made me feel like this was an incredible opportunity.
Well, looking at that, the strategic plan, the Vision 2025, there certainly are a lot of some very specific initiatives that the orchestra had focused on, such as their leadership councils, featuring the links with the diverse parts of the community, a lot of musician outreach. What are some ways that you're hoping to expand or help move that forward?
Well, I think some of those strategies are sort of in their nascent phases, and I'd love to see them be really realized in a robust way. You know, I think one of the great successes of the symphony is its community embedded musicians program. This is a program where musicians sort of split time between playing in the orchestra and doing really meaningful community engagement and education work around the city. It's allowed us to have meaningful residencies with schools in underserved parts of the city, as well as with schools that serve young musicians, young artists, like the High School for the Visual and Performing Arts here. The program, I think, could certainly serve as a model for how this work is done, you know, not only in Houston, but elsewhere. And, you know, I think that I would love to see the orchestra, through the decisions that we make about our programming, through the decisions that we make about who appears on stage with the orchestra, you know, continue to reflect the diversity and energy of this great city in which we fortunately find ourselves. And I think that's something that the strategic plan helps guide us to.
That was John Mangum, who took over as executive director and CEO of the Houston Symphony in April. You can find the symphony's schedule of events at houstonsymphony.org. I hope you enjoy these conversations I bring you each week on OTTEMPO, focusing on the changing dynamics and challenges in the arts world. But remember that programs like this are made possible only through your support of this station. To become a member of the Classical Network, go to wwfm.org and click on Donate. Thank you for being a member of the global listening community that is the Classical Network. Thank you for listening to OTTEMPO. I'm your host and producer, Rachel Katz. Join me again next week as we explore more issues and trends in the world of the performing arts. You can listen to past programs of OTTEMPO by going to our arts and cultural news page at wwfm.org or searching for OTTEMPO on our program page. OTTEMPO is a production of the Classical Network and is made possible by the support of listeners like you.